shop. They check everything. They check everything on that fuel tank, and it's like, we cannot figure out how it's getting in unless it's, like, the fill.
I think it's condensation.
I think some of it is.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think from setting for 4 years before I bought it is where it was, the first time they took the water out, they didn't drain the tank, they didn't get all the water out.
I think it's the freighter in, works great.
By a bunch of.
Solved my problem.
They work great, you still have too much water.
Between the fuel and the tank.
And when I bought the boat, I took the filter, first thing I did was take that filter off, it's 3/4 full of water.
Jeez.
So it's been, it was in there when I bought it, I think.
So do you have to, like, empty the whole thing then?
To get rid of the water? Yeah, it's not easy to have, you gotta pump the tank.
All right, Richard, you can start whenever you'd like.
The answer is just don't let your tank run.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah.
No, I don't. Full.
Okay, it is 2:00, so we will call the meeting to order. This is the budget hearing for the Port of Brooklyn Harbor on Wednesday, June 15, 2022. So, we'll begin budget hearing with pledge of allegiance.
United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, under this item, I see no public comments. Okay.
Did you want to roll call?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Larry?
Here.
Ken?
Here.
Sharon?
Here.
Joe?
Here.
Richard?
Here. Okay. So that brings us to action item A, resolution 2022-06, adopting the 2022-2023 fiscal year budget, making appropriations and levying and categorizing the tax. This is just the formal process of approving the budget and the tax rate.
Correct. And there was no changes from the budget committee approval. So this is, but the budget approved back in May 10th, and this is the final process of completing our budget for 22-23 fiscal year.
Okay. Questions?
Well, I have two questions. One in the debt is the FEMA matching funds grant for loan, and are they included one way or the other in this, depending on which it is?
The FEMA is not a loan, and it's not really a grant per se.
We make payments on it.
No, under FEMA, no.
Okay.
We pay the cost, and then we get reimbursed. There's no loan, so whatever we incur the cost, we pay, and then we turn in the reimbursements to FEMA and also Business Oregon, then they pay those.
And that's our matching fund?
Yeah, it includes a matching, yes.
So that was, it's not a grant, it's an appropriation essentially from the state of Oregon.
The state of Oregon and FEMA.
Yeah, I'm talking about the matching.
Imagine, right. Yes, correct.
Sorry.
Yes, not a loan, not a grant.
My second question is, the fuel dock shows a $1,050,000 on page 2. I don't follow the 1 million. Where does this number come from?
It's on page 1.
Budget summary, page 2. It's part of revenue.
So that, those are resources. So that includes our selling the fuel, and then our labor pumping fuel.
We're selling $1 million worth of fuel a year.
Yes, that's what we're anticipating.
Okay. For whatever reason, that's more than I thought we were selling.
We're almost 900,000 this year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
The prices going up is really just fuel cost is what's driving making that number.
Like the gallons may be about the same as
gallons
past, but the cost is 2-3 times more.
Yeah, the the gallons haven't changed, just the dollars.
Okay, any other questions?
No.
Okay. Need a motion?
Okay, recommended motion. Motion to approve resolution number 2022-06, adopting the 2022-2023 fiscal year budget, making appropriations, and imposing and categorizing the tax.
I second it.
Okay.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay, any further comments or thoughts about the budget? All right, well, we will adjourn the budget hearing at this time and open the regular meeting. So we've done the roll call and everybody's still here.
Yeah.
So are there any modifications, additions?
I want to do the roll call, sorry. Adjourn for one meeting, let's do the roll call.
Okay.
Make it official.
All right. Danielle?
Larry?
Here.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Here.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Here. Okay. Now, having done that, are there any additions, modifications, or changes to this?
No.
No.
No. Okay, anybody need to declare a potential conflict of interest?
No.
Nope. Okay. So with that, take a motion to approve the agenda.
I make a motion to approve the agenda as written.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay. And approval for the meeting minutes. Okay. I'll make a motion to that effect.
I make a motion to approve the budget committee meeting Tuesday, May 10th, 2022, and regular commission meeting Wednesday, May 18th, 2022. As written or discussed.
Second. Larry? Larry? Any further discussion about that? Okay. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay, that brings us to public comment. We have one in front of us. Tony Perry.
I just did, Perry.
Come up so we can kind of hear you.
Okay. Well, the last time we met, you suggested I look at the second choice for the railway down the end of the boardwalk. And sorry I didn't get back to you sooner, but we had to have a club meeting in order to find out what we were going to do. I brought you a piece of paper with just my notes from that I'm going to talk to you about, a little picture of the satellite view. And kind of what I was thinking of doing, proposing to do, is make it a bigger project than just the railway. Because it's too big of an area for us to just plop that same layout that I had for this little spot here, plop it there. I mean, where would you put it? Closer to the Indian exhibit or the other end or in the middle? So I kind of looked at it as a whole project thing. I have a theme for it. It's called Destinations, and that's quite fitting to have it at a port. I don't know if you remember the old MASH signs, you know, the directional signs with posts with all the different places in the world, that kind of a thing. Some of the good things that we've had in this community, that have been done recently, well, not that recently, but Easy Manor Park, if you're familiar with the kids section there, the jungle gym and the swings, it's gotten great response, and there is no place in Harbor that has anything like that. So that would be a nice addition. And I would think if you look at the picture here, below the second small picture here is the Easy Manor Park. And just imagine that, pick that up and plop it right on this end here on this side, okay? With me so far. Then that leaves this other green area, it's all the grass right now, as a possible botanic garden where we just have plants that do well here, don't make a mess, you know, not a lot of leaves, like a big maple tree or something like that, just like nice flowering trees. And with a pathway, you know, a sidewalk through, just imagine a sidewalk kind of through that green belt with a raised bed on the outside of it and raised bed on the inside of it. So the people could walk through, kind of meander through. Mm-hmm. Inside that garden, we still do the same kind of thing with the alpine vegetation for the railway, and we'd have loops and then other loops all in that garden. I think you could get buy-in from the garden club, possibly. You only need a few to help you, and that would be a great addition. Also, it'd be an art garden because the theme is destinations. In the garden, you have garden art. Say, for example, the Leaning Tower of Pisa would be a destination. Somebody could create a tower or a Eiffel Tower or a Gateway Arch. Using any landmark or destination you can think of can be done. We've done it in the theme. When we do Christmas time, we've done Around the World by Train, where we've had all different world spots. We've done Landmarks of America. We have all the great ones here. A good example of that is the Botanic Garden in Chicago. They have a separate garden railway inside the big Botanic Garden, and their theme is Landmarks of America. And they've recreated like Mount St. Helens, the White House, all different areas around the country, and they made them all out of materials that, you know, natural, that can not, you're not spending a lot of money on things, and they're durable. And then to make a joint, see, anything you would put up against the Indian Memorial, you know, you wouldn't be a neighbor and just put up a hedge right next to it. That just would be terrible. So it'd have to be something that would blend nicely. So the garden would do that, because then you'd have low plants. So like they have those portals in that display that you would look out. We wouldn't block those sight lines. You know what I mean? The only thing we would want to block is to have a hedge high enough to block the cars in the parking lot behind it. Otherwise, you'd see right over the cars and the mountains behind. So it would look very nice, stacked up, depth of field. Let's see, what else? I just think it could be made with enough buy-in from the community. If you guys wanted to initiate some kind of a committee that would ask, you know, go and sell the idea to the garden club, meet with them, see if they were interested, and then come up with a committee that would do some fundraising and actually pay for it. The stuff for the Easy Manor Park, we got just grants you can get for kids' playgrounds very easily. And the staff ended up, it was supposed to have AmeriCorps build the thing, but it ended up being city staff put it together, and they loved it. All the crew, they enjoyed putting it together. So that's something we could do here. Like I say, you can sell memorial trees to pay for the rest of the landscaping. Like I say, the art garden, things can be voluntarily made or commissioned. You know, it works out fine. If you want to see an example of it, go to the Chicago Botanic Garden video on YouTube, and you'll see what I'm talking about as far as what a garden looks like with people walking through different landmarks, miniature landmarks. So anyway, that's what I came up with. And otherwise, you know, we have the materials to do this little garden here. We don't have to do this big thing, and putting just a little thing out there logistically it just wouldn't work. So that's why I came up with a second plan. So I'll let you guys think about it, and thanks for your time.
Thank you. Okay, that brings us to the management reports, starting with Safe Security Environmental.
Court maintenance was briefed on defensive driving for the month of May, since tourist season is coming towards us. And basic housekeeping rules, we had 5 incidences, bringing the year total to 46. We had a shingle come off of the Kurt Marshall Basin restroom on the woman's side. It did create a little bit of a leak in there, but maintenance was able to patch the roof and clean up the water. We have someone that ended up being drunk on the boardwalk, broke a bottle in the parking lot, and then started walking through businesses on Laurel Harbor Road. The sheriffs were called, and the individual was arrested and verbally trespassed. The Coast Guard was contacted early that next morning by a person on a vessel asking for assistance, and was taken by ambulance. Then he was dropped back off by Brookings PD, and the individual went onto a vessel and started throwing things in the water, and the sheriff had to be called again, and the person was arrested and trespassed. And then there was a main water line that broke on 101. The water flow ended up coming into the harbor through that 84-inch culvert in the boatyard. For security, Four Aces Security and the port team recorded 141 issues for the month of May, bringing it to 481 so far. Monthly inspections were completed for the stormwater pollution control plan. Due to the weather during Memorial Day, Bigfoot Blues Festival canceled, but Curry County Cruisers continued on. Starting in June, Brookings Bodacious Bazaar will begin. It will be the second and fourth Saturday of each month. And for the month of July, we are to expect Brookings Harbor Sky High 4th of July, happening July 2nd and 3rd. Is there any questions?
Hearing none, we'll move to the Harbor Master Report.
Okay. At the RV park, the beach gangways were installed, and the toy bins that Fred Myers donates the toys, they were put out by each ramp. Small fence repairs and cable ends are continued to be replaced as needed. And we had 5R Construction out to dig out and fix some of the potholes along the main road of the RV park. It was a 31% occupancy at the RV park. It was down 12.1% from last year. The marina, Gypsy Lee, was demoed and removed from the port property. That area will now be used for docks to be moved away from the commercial basin so the banks can be redone, and they'll be reorganized in the back there. Materials were ordered. We've actually already have the fence done along the Lower Harbor Road. The post rotted out, the fence started falling over, so we replaced the whole fence. Boat launches, there's 161 boat launches, down 72 from last year, so it's not too bad. There's still quite a few boats going, given the amount of rain that we had. Telehandler jobs, we did 6. Haul outs, we did 8. Commercial receiving docks, Pacific Seafood did report that one of their hoists was not operating correctly. It was reported that it was bearing. They did take a closer look, and it was the ball bearings that rotate the top had actually wore down and was causing it to be metal to metal. So those bearings were replaced, and the hoist is functioning well now. One of the things that did that made Gary and I did look at though is that now that some of these hoists are starting to get older, and as the time goes on, the replacements that they have now to meet today's safety standards can be done, but our docks, our older docks, don't have the engineering, the basis that would require to put a hoist out there to do what they're doing now. So it'll be something that we have to look at when we're redoing docks and as we make plans to see how we're going to adjust for that. Commercial retail buildings, the boatyard shop is still being monitored weekly. No new problems have been reported. At Slugs and Stones, cars have been reported parking along the curb that separates the gift shop and our parking lot. making it very difficult for cars that are in the parking lot to back out. So we painted that curb on both sides of it red to establish the fire lane. So far, it's been working great. People haven't been parking back there, so it's working better. 76 work orders were completed throughout the port. The staff did spend an entire day, over a day actually, removing undergarments from the commercial bathroom. The commercial bathroom continues, I'm just putting this out there now, because I mean, we're going to have to talk about it more, but the commercial bathroom with the showers continue to be a major issue with the code being given out and then confrontations between a commercial fisherman and the non-commercial fishermen or users using it. I did put door locks on it earlier just so there was doors handles there because I was thinking about locking them and putting hours right into you guys, but since then the doors have already been kicked in. So I'm going to come up with a new plan and we're going to have to talk about more about how we want those showers to operate and talk to Oregon State Marine Board and see if what adjustments can be made to our current practices. So that's with the bathrooms. On that same bathroom, the roof has begun to start tearing off. The underlayment is tearing off. So we got quotes to have the roof redone. Edwards Roofing was the lowest quote for the work. So we're on his schedule and hope to have that done soon. That's it. Any questions?
Yes, sir.
So what's occurring at the bathroom? How are the security cameras working to detect what's going on? Or have you been able to see anything on the cameras?
Security cameras right now that are over there are basically directed at the parking lots and the basins to see the boats and the parking lots. We don't have a camera pointing right down at the doors of the bathrooms and putting cameras, you know, that's about as far as you're going to be able to go with cameras at the bathroom. So, but you can consistently see that there's non-boaters, non-transient boats or our mortgage holders constantly parked there, and I change that code all the time. One of my most phone calls I get now is, what's the bathroom code? And it just seems our efforts are not working yet. So I don't know what else we can do, but I'm going to start exploring some more options.
What's the cost to put a camera down there?
A couple $1,000 to get a camera installed.
$3,000 bucks to put a stationary camera in there.
It's just looking straight down at the doors. Yeah. Well, they're getting the code and going in the bathrooms to begin with, and then the showers are a separate door. And when I put the door locks on that, they're both kicked in now. I think the fishermen went in there and locked the doors so they couldn't use them, and then they got kicked in.
Oh.
One of your buddies. No. But it's whatever is happening inside those bathrooms is kind of.
Say, Travis, say you do put a camera there. I mean, how is that going to stop them? I mean, what are our options for, you can't really use the camera to have them arrested, right?
No. I'm going to come back with you guys. We can talk about this for a long time, but I'm going to come back with some options of different things we can do, just reducing the hours, putting keys, if I have to put chain link gates over it, so they can't be kicked in now, and make them come to the office and get a key to go get the showers, check out the key, and, you know, the showers will be able to be used from, you know, 8 to 5, and that will be it.
A steel door.
Yeah, or when we talk about it, we just accept where we're at with it and don't spend any more time or effort on it, just move on and keep monitoring it and see if we're hitting a high point right now with the summertime being here, or you know, if it's something we need to keep looking into. But I'm going to give you guys some options, and then we can talk about it at a different meeting.
Okay.
Well, I'm concerned because it sounds to me several things occur to me. First of all, you know, the functionality of that for the commercial fleet is it should be available to them 24 hours a day, so that when they get back to shore, if those guys want to take a shower or go to the bathroom, then they should be able to get in there. So I hate to see us defeat that. This sounds to me like a kind of a directed effort by some folks to go down there and vandalize that place. I mean, I can't imagine somebody just randomly going down there and saying, oh, just kick the door and then go inside. So I don't know. But I would like to see some options that try and keep the spirit of what that bathrooms there and showers are there for. So that we, you know, I can't imagine that's going to be very advantageous for guys crewing one of those boats that's laid over here for 2 days to walk over to the office, get a key, go take a shower, take the key back. That just doesn't seem to me that's going to work. Okay. Anything else? One of our favorite places in the port, the bathroom. Okay, so that brings us to the financial manager report.
All right.
Now this is a consolidated report.
Consolidated report. Yeah. In month, unrestricted cash and equivalents totaled $463,934. Restricted cash and equivalents totaled $956,367. The total checking and savings cash at $1,492,772. The profit and loss, we were at total revenue for all funds $281,507. Total expenses was $394,362. So the net income for May was a negative $112,844. The biggest unusual expenses for that month, we did pay McLennan Excavation $83,000 for the buying materials for the RV park project. Then I listed out some other things that we did. We did have Tidewater do the grading and packing at the boat trailer storage yard. EMC Engineering is doing some wastewater plant and warehouse engineering for us. And Tidewater did some grading for us in the gear storage, so reduced some of the potholes and found the best drive order. The fiscal year profit and loss versus budget, we're still on track on our general fund programming. The thing that's lopsided now is was our FEMA project never happened. We never spent any money on our FEMA projects. That's why the overall numbers actually look better, but it's because we haven't. We didn't get the money, and we didn't spend any money for the FEMA project. The manager report side of things, we continue working with AMC to finalize the construction drawings for the board approval. The bid package did go to our lawyers for their review. They have some questions, and Jack and I are going to take care of their questions. Once we have the construction drawings and the bid package, we come to the board with the final package for you guys to review and approve. FEMA is still reviewing our final budget, and they seem to be going backwards to for us. They're asking questions all the way back to when the disaster happened. So Jack is going to do a simple letter explaining what the damages were, and we'll see if that takes care of it. I've already reached out to some of our legislators to let them know what's going on. So we'll see how FEMA reacts, but they act like it's going to be another couple months before they get the final approval. So that being said, I've already determined that we're not going to do any FEMA work this summer. It's not going to pan out trying to get a contractor to do any kind of work. So I'm looking to do everything next summer. So I put a little schedule in here, what I'm anticipating. And actually, when I did this schedule, I didn't know about there are two more months of reviewing our final budget. So my little schedule here is probably off by a month or two.
Then support items, EMC was out here looking at the warehouse, but we also had them looking at the Hallmark dock. We did get our survey points on the Hallmark dock, so we can monitor that as we go. But we also looked at underneath and see if we need to do any kind of repairs to that dock. And we're kind of strategizing a plan if we happen to get grant money or something to repair that dock. And we also looked at the broken receiving dock as well over by Pacific Seafood. The Business Oregon, so I have an update on Business Oregon about seeking funding. They are interested in giving us a loan for the boatyard warehouse. So they're going to give me some documents next week, but it's based on a complete financial analysis. So at least they're interested. We're going to keep Umpqua Bank as an option B if they decide not to do it or give us the loan. So that Umpqua Bank to fall back, depending on what we discuss.
Is there a big difference in the interest?
Don't know.
Okay.
Interest is still going up. Let's see, what else? As Travis mentioned, we did remove our last boat that we had abandoned on us, and just to kind of reiterate, since we started cleaning the boatyard over, was it at least 6 years ago? I think about 6 years ago, we've demolished or sold or got rid of 40 boats of different sizes and types.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a huge accomplishment. I did have a meeting with Marcus Hines and Kristen Penner with the Oregon Coast Visitor Association. They are working on trying to improve selling local fish product by 10%. They're the ones that want to help put our signs up for our charter and guides signs. They're going to help pay for that. And they're looking for advertisement. Trying to increase, they have a goal of trying to increase it by 10% for locally caught and processed fish. We did have Katie Pratt from DeFazio's office helping us, trying to find out where the funding debt for our wastewater treatment plant. EPA, they just responded to me that this is a new program coming through the federal government and they don't have a staff that monitor that money, and they don't know how to disperse the money, so it probably won't be until late this year or next year we might see funding, and it's going to go through the grant program, so I don't know how that's going to work, so it's a lot of unknowns, and the federal government, we got to deal with to get that funding, so.
So you just said
mm-hmm.
that congressionally authorized appropriations the Port of Brookings Harbor going into the EPA are lost, basically, and they don't know what to do about it?
They don't have a staff to monitor how to divvy out the money or what programs, so they're waiting. The regional EPA is waiting for the headquarters to tell them exactly how to monitor it and how to get the money out to us, disperse the money. So.
So, and when we get it, we got a year to spend.
Maybe. It really depends on all their documentation. We don't really know until we see their process.
Sorry, a little frustration bleeding out there.
We had a couple meetings, several meetings about the 4th of July fireworks. Travis and I met with organizers and everybody. I think we're on track to have a good 4th of July fireworks. There's no events happening that day, so it's basically people are going to be enjoying the day, then the fireworks at 10 p.m. is when they're going to set up the fireworks, so everyone knows. Anything else you want to add to that? I think South Coast fishermen are going to be flocking the fallout zone. We're going to help set up the perimeter of the zone, give them barricades. And then they're going to monitor the cars going through and close it off when the time comes. I Any questions? Financial report, manager report?
Tell me a little bit more about this meeting you have with the climate scientist on climate resiliency for the port. What was that all about?
I think she was just looking to see what the port was interested in on any kind of climate resiliency, which it is basically electric charging stations for cars or potentially vessels. The electric vessels in here?
Well, don't.
I know, they're out there.
Well, don't wink at that, because Yamaha is just coming out with an entirely new outdrive system for recreational boats that is electric. So I don't know what it's attached to. I'm assuming it's a big battery of some kind, but that stuff is going. So that may be down the road somewhere.
The technology I've seen in articles is kind of hybrid type of thing. It's fuel and electric, but it's mostly cruising vessels going across the oceans. Not so much, but you know, it starts there, then it goes into the commercial industry. But I think years down the road before that happens.
Well, I would just turn my eyes to our friends to the south, because they're going to set the national standard on what's happening. And I've already heard them discussing boats in California, so I wouldn't be surprised to see something going that way. So.
There is a lot of grants out there for green energy stuff, so but the grants come with matching and everything else, so it's something to look at in the future.
Okay. All right, any other comments or questions for Gary? Okay, entertain a motion to approve the management report.
I'll make a motion to approve the management report. Manager's report.
Exactly. Now we have a motion and a second to approve the management report. Further discussion? Hearing none. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes.
Okay, so that now brings us to action items, beginning with action item A, vessel and or trailer storage agreement. And that's what this is.
Yeah, that's the latest and greatest revision from our legal counsel. So the form that we're using before was old. I don't know if the board ever approved the previous one, but anyway, the new one from our legal counsel added a couple items in there. One is to help if they happen to sell a vessel, they got to get let the port know if the port needs approved to sell the vessel, so they dump the vessel on us. They added a section in there about no maintenance in the boat storage yard without our approval.
And you and Travis both read this and it worked for you guys?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And legal's good?
Apparently. Yeah, it's a lot of what we practice now. It's just put in writing, so it's understood that if you leave your stuff behind, you will be charged accordingly for it. And if you want to do work in there, you got to tell us, because there's our best management practices that need to be followed constantly. Not constantly, but often enough, we see people in our boat storage areas doing miscellaneous work in there, and it's kind of to put it in writing so when you signed it, what it says clarifies what we're trying to enforce right now.
Is there a reason why we don't have that they need to be insured, have insurance? I mean, so they're backing up and hitting my boat, they don't have to have insurance?
I do vehicle insurance more than anything else.
Well, what if they don't?
Well,
breaking state law then.
Well, I realize that. And we have to have insurance for everything we do around here. I just didn't know what we did in there.
Currently, right now, to have your boat in our storage, you don't have to have insurance.
On the boat?
On, yeah, on.
Or trade.
Yeah, we don't check that. So if that's something in the future that you guys want to do, we can discuss it and try and implement it. But right now, if we don't check insurances for storage boats.
Okay. Anything further? All right, the next item, motion.
I make a motion to approve the draft vessel and trailer storage agreement for the boat and trailer storage area to be put in effect immediately.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay, that brings us to the vessel Miss Stacy Moorage renewal.
Okay, so this has been going on for over 6 months now? Over 6 months. The owner's got insurance reinstated on the vessel. The moorage has been in limbo. We brought this to the board because we weren't sure if the board would want to keep the vessel here. They were going through the ownership paperwork transfer, which they just completed recently. The marine survey, they didn't want to do the marine survey until they got the paperwork completed. So they were working on getting a marine survey done on it. It hasn't been done yet. The liens are still in place on crab pots, on the crab and the crab permit. We recommend those liens stay on there until we're satisfied with their plans for that vessel. So what I'm asking now is to go ahead and approve the mortgage agreement for this year because we're only halfway through it. They haven't paid mortgage on it. It's been in limbo. So I'm asking you guys permission to approve it, and then we'll look at it from the next one's going to be in December. Before December, we'll see what the status is.
If we approve this and they pay it, does that affect the liens?
I don't believe so.
So what are the conditions under which the liens are removed?
It's satisfactory of the current condition survey, and that if we're going to keep the boat here.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So everything's paid up.
But not
that's what we're asking for, is that we have everything, but we haven't been paid yet.
The previous deficit.
Yes. Yes,
well, this all is we're just talking right. About this year now.
Right, this year.
So everything is up to date to this year.
Correct.
Okay.
And you've had conversations, and they plan on fishing that boat.
That's their intention. That's what we believe, yes.
And so the lease in the rears is paid or due, mortgage?
It's due.
It's none.
Okay.
Okay, any further comments or discussion? All right. Motion?
Motion to approve Miss Stacy Moorage agreement from January 1, 2022 to December 31, 2022. Update the board at the November 2022 regular meeting on the status of the vessel for consideration on the next moorage agreement.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Brings us to the charter and guide signed agreement form.
All right, so we have a form made for anyone that is paying the charter and guide fee that wants to be on that sign. So we have a form, and also kind of combine this approval with our sign concept that you guys approved the last meeting with the locations, kind of finalize our locations. You probably kind of talk about the size of the sign, how many spots you want on it. How many spots you want on it, you can kind of determine the size of the sign. And then the You Are Here map, I put in two different types of You Are Here maps. I'm not sure exactly what the board would like to see on You Are Here map, or if we really need a You Are Here map on it. The cost will go up if we want to put a You Are Here map on the backside.
I thought the purpose of the map was to show them where the boats were moored.
Well, that works for the moorage boats, but the non-moorage boats, it wouldn't do any good for them. And so, go on track, right?
You guys have any idea of how many boats are hauled in that are charters that aren't moored? A majority or percentage?
I would say probably anywhere from 15-ish, 10 to 15.
My last count, just off the top of my head, was 19. That includes the large charter boats, the six-packs, and the day-long boats.
Yeah.
So I'm not, you know, I don't know who's going to show up. That's the issue on an annual basis.
Yeah, the percentage of people that would utilize this too.
So one of the questions that we should ask here is, when we're talking about signage, are we going to put out an individual sign for each boat or each company, or how are we going to do that?
Well, it'd be for each. I'm assuming it'd be each boat or company, whichever they choose, but it's going to be one or the other on the sign. So it'd be either fishing boat charter's name and then their phone number. And if you have a map, then you either have a grid system, or I'm not sure exactly where you got the moorage holders. We give out 9 decals for moorage holders, so we definitely know there's 9 that have moorage. And like I said, we could have 19 more that don't have moorage that wouldn't per se have a location.
Well, it's my opinion that these should be issued to the business. And I mean, if the boat is the business, fine. But looking at Tidewinds and Spricking Sport Fishing, some of those that have multiple vessels, I think it'd make more sense, and it's probably better for their business model if we put their business name on and then let them determine what's going on. I mean, that's the only doable way to do that.
I agree. I'm looking at this and Brookings Sport Fishing. I mean, it seems repetitive to put that for as many boats as they have. It's that company. One. That's
the phone number.
Right.
Well, I don't know how they operate, but I have a fairly good idea that I suspect when they're going to look at how many people are signed up on a given day to go and determine how many boats are going to go and who's going to take them. So,
but
that company.
I have a few things that I want to say. Bear with me, okay?
So, for the record, your name?
My name is Jade Lynn. I work over at Tidewinds Sport Fishing.
Okay.
So I'm here to represent him as well. First of all, Brookings Fishing is all separately owned boats by the private captains, so I feel like to sponsor them correctly, they all have to have their own separate sign because they're all individually owned, where Tidewinds is all owned by Kyle. So that's number one thought in my brain, just to be fair to them since they own their own boats. Second, I actually have part of our agreement that we made when the building was tore down and we took over the building right here behind you guys. And in section 6, it actually has a no competition clause that was written up that nothing else in the retail section needs to be anywhere near Tidewinds because they're the same type of business. So just kind of clarifying that it's in section 6. And it also was renewed, we have to renew it every 5 years, so it actually was signed in 2020 by you guys, but everything still abides the same way. And there's no amendment in the contract. So, and that's on file in the court, and we actually have it on file in the office too as well. So to see where the sign is, you know, just make sure it's not in the retail section or however you do it, because it's all there. and there's nothing that should compete with Tidewinds. There's nothing that should be the same type of business. And if you guys are promoting that and the retail space or any part of the port land, it just kind of makes you guys look like you're not paying attention. So, just saying.
Just for the record, we have reviewed that clause with our attorney and discussed with him
what
it
means. Yes.
What did they say? He said, is that in their interpretation, that means we will not lease retail space in this site to a competing business. Said nothing about signs or advertising.
Okay.
So
within their interpretation, that's what they decided.
Yeah, that should be listened to.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else? So, where are we here?
Location.
Well, how we're going to do this.
Did we decide on how many times?
I think it sounds to me like the best course of action is to contact the various businesses that we have already issued decals to and say, okay, listen, how do you want to do this? If Annie Martin's business is actually a kind of a clearinghouse for individual boats and they want to be advertised individually, then certainly we can do that. If Tidewinds wants to do it as a business, I think that makes sense. I'd have to defer to them to tell us what they want to do here. Because I don't know anything about how they dispatch those vessels or how they decide which ones go and who goes and that sort of thing.
All his boats are in the same location. I think Tidewinds are all close together on the same dock.
We're all
also.
On dock A. Yeah. We've got four slips right there.
Should we just 20 available spots, 25 available spots, and try? We're going to have to put a limit, a number on this, or the sign's going to be 10 feet tall. If we figure on somewhere around between 20 and 25 spaces, the lettering size is a big issue that's going to determine how fast we're growing. So what do you guys think about letter size? 3-inch letters? 4-inch is going to start getting really big. I'm kind of hoping that we can get these little slats to be somewhere total of 4 inches, and they would stack on top of each other kind of the way they are. So 3-inch letters?
Well, 3 inches is the Motor Boat Safety Act standard for visibility, so I think 3-inch makes sense.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
You've got river guides down here.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the river salmon season, steelhead season, the ocean salmon season, how many guides do we have buying permits right now at the port?
Zero. Zero.
But the season isn't here right now.
Right.
When the season comes on, there's going to be more than 40 boats, at least minimum. Leonard, you can tell us better than that. How many guides are on the river alone in the steelhead season?
Lots of guides on the river, but are they here in the port? I guess is my question to you.
Pardon me?
Are they using the port other than clean fish?
No. There's a spot on the sign, river guides. All I want to know is the number, and then are we going to be listing them if they buy a port sticker that they're a guide?
If they buy a port sticker, then yes, they will have an opportunity.
Then you're going
to
need very small lettering if they all want to be listed.
What I'm trying to consider is how many of these people are actually going to participate in. How many of these guideboats are going to come in and pay the $300 that we're asking for to get the sticker, and then... You know, these signs are, this is at their expense as well, right?
No, the first sign is on them, but if they want to change it within that same year, then it's on them.
So it is what I'm getting at. I mean, do we want to anticipate worst case scenario with 40 people, 50 people being put on there?
Or I'm just asking the question.
Do
I don't
we
know
want to look at starting with, between 20 and 30? And if we end up filling up all those spaces, then maybe we need to look at a bigger sign altogether.
It might be simpler to just...
Or a wider sign. Maybe we could add on to each sign.
Maybe it would be simpler to only list boats that have moorage here.
Well, but we're trying to capture the others that come in here too.
Pardon me?
We're trying to capture the others that are coming in here too.
Well, they're trying to help promote the people that would be paying the $300 that we're asking for, giving them an option.
My guess is that very few river guides are going to actually want to do that. The vast majority of them launch on the bar and retrieve on the bar. So I would think we would be probably well served. My opinion would be to put 24 signs on it, even numbers, so we can put them side by side to begin with and see how that works and see if we actually sell 24 permits.
And then the grid, the map on the back, is this something we want to explore right now, or do we want to just put it in general map of the port? It's going to be difficult and expensive to put this on the back of one of these signs. And all of our signs will be facing, you know, out towards the traffic, out at the launch ramp, towards where people are going to drive. So the only way you're going to see this, too, is if you get out and walk behind the sign to be able to see it. So they are kind of designed to be able to walk up, too, but is this an added expense that we want to do right now? The only maps, the boats that will be on here will be our mortgage holders anyways, which would exclude, you know, the rest of the people on the board.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, it's kind of up to the charter operator to get the people to a vote. But I would like to, at some point, have at least something to refer to so there's a map that people can see. You know, if somebody says, well, I'm on B7, it'd be nice to have them have a place to go look and say, well, where the heck is that?
And no. Where would you be? Oh, like on the sign? Is that what you're talking about? Okay.
I don't know where else to put it.
Why can't we just do something like this in plastic or something and put it on the front? It doesn't have to be the full size of the sign.
So it could be smaller. It all depends on what kind of sign you want to present to it. You want just like a general, like you're saying, like basin one, basin two, and just put some dock letters on the sign itself.
Letters and numbers.
And just have like a generic sign on the backside.
If you get clients coming to Tidewinds, how do you tell them where to go?
Most of the time they call me up in the middle of the morning and say they can't find us. So I use a 100-man as a point system for them to get here. So, and then when they're checked in, I just let them know they go all the way down the boardwalk. We're on dock A as an apple. Go all the way down left. If you've fallen, you've gone too far. Left, up, and right.
That's a good one.
It works every time, too. It does special stuff in here.
It all depends on how much. To me, this sign, and this is my opinion, this sign is kind of just an added bell and whistle to put on there. I mean, the charter guys, they're in communication with the people. They're going to tell them where they want to meet. But this is an added bell and whistle just so you have something on the back of your sign. But that is my opinion. I just don't know how much use it's going to be.
How about this? How about if we do the signs, do the advertising, test the utility for the first season and see how it works, and if there's issues or if the people who have a sign up say, hey, would you put up a map so people can find us, then that'll help guide us. We're kind of, you know, speculating right now of what's going to work and what isn't. We don't even know what's needed, so let's build a test article and see what happens. That makes sense.
I have another question. So you said that it kind of, this is something that benefits for them since everyone's paying the $300 charter fee right now, right?
Yes.
Can I get preferential treatment since we've been paying way more than that for the last few years? Like $50 per person, and we maxed out at $44 before we got the new boat, so that was a lot of money. Can I get more than $300, so no special. Can
we
I
can't
charge
go.
To mine? That's a special?
Hold on. We're talking science.
Oh, I am.
Let's just talk science.
I am.
And get this resolved.
Everything has to be as equal as it can.
Yes.
Right.
So, anybody want to make a motion here?
I have one question.
Want me to make a motion?
I just have one thought.
can you differentiate between a charter captain who has to have a captain's license and the common river guide? Because if all I had was a drift boat and a pair of oars, $300 is really nothing to have the name of my business down here and point people that way. What you might eliminate some of the river guides. Just thought.
I think we should test fly.
I get it.
Make a motion, Richard.
I understand what you're saying.
Well, let's just see how many are interested.
So I make a motion to approve proceeding with a signed concept design without the You Are Here map and location, and limit the number of signs to 24 individual signs. Individual businesses per sign, I guess, was what I'm trying to say.
And everyone's okay with the three that I located on the map? One at the boat launch, one out here by the port office.
Yeah, I don't get about the port office, though, because you've got a picture of both sides. And
we're trying to figure out which side
you've got. Well, you know, the port office, I'm going to tell you, when I'm over here volunteering, I cannot tell you how many people come in and want to know where that port office is.
They come into my office all the time asking me if I'm the port office.
I have to send them back across. So if we block the view of the port office too much, they're really not going to find it.
So my motion would include a sign at the RV park, a sign at this boat ramp, and a sign somewhere near the port office.
Okay.
To be determined.
By
management?
Okay. Good. All right.
Okay?
Yep.
You want me to restate all that, or do you think we got that?
Do you want me to second that?
Well, I want to make sure everybody understands what we just did. Okay, so the motion was that we would proceed.
Yes, we do.
With approving the design concept with three locations, the boat ramp, the RV park, and somewhere near the port office, to be determined by the manager, that we would have 24 individual business signs with 3-inch letters on each sign. Okay? That's the motion. You can second it if you want or not.
Second.
Okay. All right, so we have a motion and a second. Danielle.
Larry.
Yes.
Ken.
Yes.
Sharon.
Yes.
Joe.
No.
Richard.
Yes. Okay, so that brings us now to the information items, and we're going to begin with a presentation by Elena Nowak of the Urban Control Commission to talk a little bit about this topic. We decided to allow public comment on this issue following this presentation, so if you didn't comment at the beginning, we'll get a chance to talk about it now. We thought we'd make it a little more,
yeah.
A little more contemporary to the discussion.
I know, it stays right here. Trust me, I tested it.
Danielle. Okay. Well, where do these mics go over there?
Yeah, it's going to go right. Yeah, I've got a remote right here to use.
Will you show me, please, each button?
She's not
running
at home.
All right. Okay, so
I don't think it's sufficient.
Okay. Oh, perfect. Okay, so it went forward. Yeah.
Thank you.
Either one.
Thank you. Oh, he's doing something on his phone. I didn't do it with her. Okay. See, at least I put it down for you guys that we just did that. Okay, I think I pressed on the center and it should know. So now we know what happened. It's a slideshow. Perfect, thank you. Okay. All right. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Thank you for this opportunity to meet with you today to help inform you about the offshore wind energy issue that is happening right now off the Oregon coast with a BOEM, Bureau of Ocean Energy Management deadline ending at the end of the month for the two coal areas of the southern and central coast. My name is Elena Novak. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Trail Commission, an industry-funded state government entity that represents Oregon Pink Shrimp Fleet, Bottom Trail, Brownfish Fleet, Midwater, Rockfish, and Whitehead Fleet. Coastwise, all the vessels participating in those fisheries who deliver to the Oregon shoreside craft. While I work for the Oregon Trail Commission, I really represent the coalition of commercial and recreational fishermen, processors, the gear shop, and any other business that is dependent on the fishing industry in this issue. And I am here not by myself. I have several others from the industry with me today. Brett Pattinger, right there. As you know, Brett, he is the Vice Chair of the Pacific Fishery Management Council and a trout fisherman here, has several boats. And he was before with the Oregon Trout Commission. I also have with us Willie Jordan, owner of the Catalyst Restaurant, also a fisherman. And I have Leonard Krug right here with me, a director of the Oregon Anglers Alliance. After I complete my presentation, I will pass the torch to the guys to offer their comments on the issue for you as well. This is not just about the potential negative impacts to Oregon's fishing industry, and we will talk more about this throughout the presentation. Okay, let's hope I'm not gonna stop. Okay. It is important to note that I and others are not actually opposed to offshore wind development. This is not about denying that the climate is changing and that we need to seek out and incorporate more renewable energy into our electricity portfolio. But I think you will see as we move through the presentation that the known and unknown risks associated with the current offshore wind development process and the actual turbine technology is significant and they should be avoided as much as possible. As background, the Biden administration has made a commitment to implement 30 gigawatts of offshore wind energy in the nation's oceans by 2030. There are several projects in the works, and the projects off the East Coast, if they come to fruition, are projected to generate more than the committed 30 gigawatts. Regardless, BOEM is fast-tracking the offshore wind development process, and specifically leak sales. This alone has many concerns as the federal government is privatizing and industrializing our oceans with very little upfront analysis on the environmental and economic impact of leasing hundreds of square miles to private companies for their use. The average lease length is 25 to 30 years. Yeah, I do have a spare bottle of water. Thank you.
Thank you.
at the same time, the BOEM process is ongoing. We have a state process that includes the requirements of House Bill 3375, a bill which passed the Oregon legislature in 2021 and which requires the Oregon Department of Energy to produce a report identifying the opportunities and challenges of implementing 3 gigawatts of offshore wind energy of Oregon by 2030. The bill did not commit to any deployment amount, which is prudent considering all the unknowns around the technology. The final results of the study are due to the Oregon legislature by September 15, 2022. And the reason I say unknown technology, because while floating, offshore wind certainly exists around the world, deep water floating does not. And that makes it really a prototype-based, experience-based proposed development. You may say, but offshore wind has been around for a while, and it has, but it is fixed turbines, not floating offshore wind. Floating technology is required in deeper water, and there is no place in the world where floating offshore wind is operational under the same conditions that the Pacific Ocean provides of our coast. I mean, we have been trying to design a weather buoy that won't break loose for over 100 years, and still haven't mastered that. There are also gigantic structures, twice the height of the Statue of Liberty. Actually, I recalculated yesterday, it is almost 2.8 of the Statue of Liberty that includes the foundation, or the podium. There have been 3 stakeholder meetings held by Department of Oregon Department of Energy over the last several months where the draft results of the study have been made available to the public. I wanted to highlight over these next few slides what's contained in that report, and while I won't go into the detail now about each impact, you can see that there are a variety of negative impacts to ocean users and the environment from the implementation of offshore wind floating turbine farms that the Department of Energy is recognizing. And as you can see here, the impacts, various impacts to the fishing and our environment listed, including the potential impacts to taxpayers and electricity ratepayers, impacts to wildlife, important to tribes, various wildlife. And Leonard will speak probably a little bit to salmon concerns, right, with electromagnetic fields. This is just scratching the surface, really, what Oregon Department of Energy report lists as their concerns outlined. The laundry list keeps growing. The studies keep coming up. And one of the studies that I would recommend for you to look into, and I'd be happy to send it over your way after the meeting, is the impact of the large-scale offshore wind technology in the Mediterranean Sea. It's really applicable to our coast here. It talks about upwelling and the current and the wind speeds and how it's all interrelated, interconnected, and what the possible impact can be to that. And that's the primary connectivity. That risk extends beyond any single sector or of the economy, and the impact could be very, very long lasting. The impacts are various impacts happen to the bottom of the ocean, impact of the plume, sedimentation plume, and fouling of those massive chain links. That's the mooring system that will be attached with several anchors. My understanding is 3 or 4 mooring lines with the anchors. Anchors go 30 feet under the bottom of the seabed. Well, not the bottom of the seabed, under seabed. And are chained to the plastic, some sort of plastic
rope and attached to the semi-submerged, or there are a couple other ways, turbine is floating. It's constantly moving with a current back and forth, and it's just within the bottom of the ocean. And from what I understand, according to at least one of the BOEMs, Bureau of Ocean Energy Management BOEM presentation, that it will be the space of about a square mile each would take with the sweeps under. Then while the noise may not be the same as the pile driving that is required for the fixed foundation turbines, like East Coast of the U.S., where it's the shallower water and it's pile driven into the bottom of the ocean, so it's just fixed. It's not moving. It's always there. Ours here, due to the high depth, would have to be constantly moving. The noise, there will be noise associated with the pile driving per se. However, there is the operational noise, and some people believe that it will create very favorable habitat for some fisheries to fish around. Well, it's unclear whether any fishing will occur in and around. Not to say there is nothing for the habit for the species to attach themselves. The bow fouling, it means species that attach themselves to the chain link will have to be shaved off constantly. So whatever mussels will be growing, it creates hazard for the mooring lines. The developers will have to be shaving it off, covering the bottom with the layers and layers and layers of some sort of marine growth, whether it's mussels or invasive species or what have you, or invasive mussels. Okay. The habitat changes, and there may be more species or less species, but regardless of which way it may go, it does not mean it's positive necessarily. Even if you get one some species abandoned, it might disbalance the delicate balance in the ecosystem. Marine mammal interactions with underwater structures, which include secondary entanglement. As we all know, fishermen always get blamed for everything. And, you know, the whales periodically on the West Coast get washed out in the fishing gear. That does not mean necessarily that fishermen caused it per se. Fishing gear is so expensive, they don't intentionally lose their gear. They just don't. And secondary entanglement, it means, for example, the pot or net that you lost gets entangled with a mooring line, and then the whale tries to pass through, and that creates the secondary entanglement risk. Electromagnetic disturbances from inter-array cables, offshore substations, and expert cables, each turbine will be connected with a floating cable array. And that creates an additional layer of complexity, that the cables don't go straight hidden under the bottom. There will be suspended. So anything passes through, whether it's salmon, whales, sharks, those species that are oriented and they have the natural electromagnetic senses, something is happening. I watched the video on YouTube about what sharks do around the magnet. And magnet, essentially, what electromagnetism is, electricity that flows creates the electromagnetic field. So sharks actually attack the magnet and start trying to bite it. And one of the earlier documents from the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, while it still was the Minerals Management Service, and then Deepwater Horizon closing happened, and it quickly got restructured, changed the name, became a new entity all of a sudden, yet relies on a completely same regulatory framework, post-World War statutory framework that give them the unanimous authority over the outer continental shelf. I'm going into the weeds. I'm going to bring myself back. But I would be happy to answer any of your questions about anything that I just said. Okay. seabird and bat collision mortality, that's a very known around the world and very concerning. The science that is being often referenced by proponents of the wing, that cats kill way more birds than offshore wing, well, that's just a BS. I'm not sorry. That study is from 2013, inadequate science, and as a matter of fact, it's been already disputed in the scientific community, but it yet keeps circulating, that buildings and cats do not kill eagles. They do not kill protected endangered species out there that usually are predators, and usually they are not flying in the city. That's your common city bird that is in plenty. The numbers are great for those birds. Okay, almost through the list. Disturbance on threatened and endangered wildlife species from the noise, related to the transmission lines, removal of threatened and endangered plant species of sensitive natural communities during ground disturbing activities, loss of wildlife habitat, hydrological interruption of the placement of fill in the jurisdictional water bodies, increased risk of bird collision with transmission line improvements, the introduction and spread of terrestrial invasive plant species. So, for the invasive species, so these are referring to the land base. However, the same applies to the water base, the offshore. And invasive species, as a matter of fact, is one of the bigger concerns for those artificial reef habitats. At least that's what the European experience shows, that it is a perfect place for an invasive species from the ballast water to attach itself, because the vessels that operate, build, and operate are often coming from across the ocean, and that's the perfect opportunity to spread all those species, like urchins, for example, what we have here now, unfortunately. Okay. So, I want to say it was in mid-May, a group of wind developers flew into Coos Bay, Oregon for almost a week. And we were invited pretty much within a week of the event, a couple of, well, different fishing associations to join the panel, to meet with developers. We were given 1.5 hours for 5 associations, and I'm laughing because it's ridiculous, to come and talk, to meet developers, to express our concerns and have a meaningful engagement. Well, prior to that, we had a meeting with actual wind developers, also those same organizations. I was part of it. We spent 3 hours, and it was a meaningful discussion. It was 3 hours. We actually had time to drill down. So back to the flying event, it was called Offshore Wind Industry Flying. We thought it was not meaningful engagement, and it was very resembling to how BOEM approaches processes, with no transparency, with no meaningful engagement. We do not have a seat at the table. Local communities, no one has a seat at the table. If some people believe that task forces are the places where decisions are made, they're not. It's a non-decision-making body. It's an information-sharing entity where BOEM comes with a state and local counties and other decision-makers within the state to exchange the information. That's all that happens, and that's how BOEM decides it. So the fishing industry decided, well, you know what? We are not given a seat at the table, including at this flying local event organized by local people in Coos Bay. Might as well take a seat. Might as well build a table on the first day of their arrival and invite them. So we did. We organized a pro-fishing rally, held it on May 11th in Coos Bay. It was very well attended. Excuse me. We had fishermen from all over the coast, including there was one from Crescent City who drove there. It was great. It was positive. It was very well received. And some, we actually had even the regional director of Bureau Ocean Energy Management there. The following day, there was a meeting with the Oregon Department of Energy. That was the reason for their presence there. But one lesson that we learned after the rally, we had several of you, I think, attended our community listening sessions also. One of them was in Brookings at the end of May. And we have, by we, I mean the fishing industry together with the, our state legislature, we helped them to hold those listening sessions to facilitate the venues and stuff like that due to the financial constraints of our legislature. But one takeaway from the Brookings meeting for me personally was people didn't know what was going on. It was a room full of angry, frustrated folks. And the key message to me was, they don't know. I probably wouldn't know either if I wasn't working for the police. This is an overwhelming issue. It's overwhelming me personally. I didn't think when I took this job 4 years ago that I would be, it would be all about offshore wind energy. It's overwhelming. It's taking the very limited resource from the fishing industry to focus on something else and building value or working on local issues, but here we are, and that applies to all of us in the industry. So Bowen proposed on April 29th, of this year, two coal areas, one of Coos Bay, one of Brookings. They dropped the area in between. It was called the abandoned area. It was not meant to be, it was not supposed to be there. The area wasn't even suitable to build anything according to Bohm's evaluation of the slope. So why did they include it there in the first place? We don't know, but I guess that's irrelevant. We are facing now this. And Bohm, while to the fishing industry, they said, this is just the beginning of the process. Don't worry, there will be plenty of opportunity for input. But then we're seeing the press release and the claim is made that these areas, by Bohm, is a result of the extended, meaningful stakeholder engagement. How contradictory is that? It's not the beginning of the process. Well, Bohm calls this beginning, fine, but in my mind, or in a way how fisheries operate, the beginning happens early. The beginning happens before the action is done. This is already the action level step. And we are confined to these areas. That's all. We're to provide the comments about these. Well, how about if those areas are not appropriate for that place in the first place? And that's not where, there is no room for that. We held actually today the first of the three meetings with Bohm for the public comment. And first was in Newport, tomorrow will be in Coos Bay, and by the way, Director of Bohm will be there in person, and Gold Beach will be on Friday. I am strongly encouraging you all to come, and if I did not provide the information, Gary, please remind me and I will after the meeting. After those 5 coastal listening sessions, including the one in Brookings, Coastal Caucus produced a letter that they submitted to Bohm, and they signed it, the entire Coastal Caucus. You should have that in your packet, outlining a list of actionable items, what the Coastal Caucus wants to see, and why they believe this is a problem. After hearing from roughly 600 coastal residents, fishing members, and others about the concerns. And not the fishing industry and non-fishing industry, fishing industry, local just residents, environmentalists, there were tribes, there were so many concerns vocalized up and down the coast during this meeting. I was overwhelmed. And I am grateful to the, our members of the state legislature for recognizing that. So that letter is the step towards the right direction. And after that, on May 24th, Port of Newport passed a resolution. This is just an excerpt. The resolution is included in your packet as well. Basically taking the position on the issue and prioritizing the existing ocean users, whether it's fishing related or ocean dependent industries, just existing ocean user groups over the not yet existing offshore wind energy sector. It doesn't exist yet. There's a lot of promises. And in the rush to industrialize our oceans, the existing ocean user groups are disregarded by the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management and all their processes that we are referred to as just public. In the fishing industry, the way the council, for example, works, and Brad would speak to that much better than I do, but it's all stakeholder-driven. It's bottom-up, not up. From the top-bottom approach. All stakeholders are engaged, and the fishing industry are the most direct stakeholders. But their room is open to everyone and the public. The local residents are the stakeholders. Well, and there is no delineation as much between the industry as a stakeholder and then the public. Well, boom, the industry is offshore industry for them, offshore wind. And we are part of the public. We're not part of the stakeholders impacted by the action. Okay. We have a couple of thoughts. All the resolution, and very much in line with the Coastal Caucus letter, the asks are slow down the process. We are right now on the path of expeditiously industrializing the ocean with a prototype-based technology. We don't know. Will it work? Well, maybe Bohm would disagree, I suppose. But it hasn't been done yet. So I guess it's a gamble. And we don't know what the impact will be to our fisheries, to our environment. There is no analysis that has been done yet. It will be done after the private entities or foreign governments, some of those companies are owned by foreign governments, after they already purchased the leases for billions of dollars. We are asking to analyze cumulative impact. The area a little south of here, Humboldt, site is already going, I believe this year, going to be sold auction off. And I saw the letter to California Coastal Commission from offshore wind proponents about a lot of interest in Del Norte site. It's not even officially any, there isn't any site. I was blown away when I saw the map. And it's area Humboldt site, then Del Norte potential area, right next to the Brookings potential site. So it's insanity. And Bohm's mission is to lift the ocean, not per se to analyze the environment or prevent their damage. They will say that it's in responsible way. And in their mind, responsible ways, lift it out, sell it to the private entity, then do the analysis, and then make it work. But again, what if it's not a good idea in the first place? We don't know the unintended consequences. No one knows the trade-off because there has no study been done about it. Analyze transmission line impact, another big unknown for our deep water. Create a transparent process that includes all stakeholders. We've been asking about it from the day one I was involved. I've been involved in this project, initiative, problem, I don't even know what to call it, hands-on since the summer of 2019. And I remember that was the very last Oregon Task Force meeting in Portland, in person before pandemic hit. And I was overwhelmed with the number of comments, process, transparency. There were so many comments about it, and now I know very intimately what does that mean, because there's no transparent process. All decisions are made in secret. That is driving me personally crazy. There's no metrics involved. No one knows how and why. And today, Bones director, Pacific Region director, was saying, well, your information is important to us. When he was asked, how will this information be used? Why are we providing this decision information? Because it's important to us. I had a hard time to keep my face straight. I was glad it was, I was on Zoom. Ah, they couldn't see me. So, okay. Consider a small demonstration first, similar to pathway sites that happened quite a few years ago in Oregon. I think that's a fabulous idea, and as a matter of fact, State of Maine is going that route. That's what the state decided. We will go with a small site. Let's test it out. Let's see how it works, and we will then decide how we want to move forward. I believe it's a smart way to go. Do we need to risk our oceans and the California currents to solve the climate crisis? We don't. California current is one of the top four most productive ocean regions in the world. It's what we've got here. That's how fortunate we are. And trying to solve one environmental problem, we're creating another one that we don't even know what it means. Ocean absorbs more than half of the carbon emissions from the atmosphere. And I used to work for Oregon Department of Agriculture, and I know, I don't know much about that, but one thing I know, for the soil, agricultural soil, to absorb carbon, when the soil is depleted, it won't do such a good job. It requires certain things for the soil to absorb. So what is, do we think that ocean is capable of doing that? I don't know. I don't. Personally. So we don't need to really, ocean is not the only solution, and I don't know why it's such a direction right now. There is the all these solar opportunities. Solar is known for being four times cheaper than offshore wind. Offshore wind is twice more expensive than onshore wind. And solar is twice less expensive than onshore wind. So can we install solar panels on everyone's roof? It's cheap. And there are some studies out there about how new solar panels can produce electricity even during the more less sunny weather coming out of Australia. Onshore wind energy. We've got a bit of the onshore wind turbines around Oregon. Last time I was driving by, were they all spinning? Nope. They weren't. There were spinning some, but there were also many of them that weren't. And actually, the last time I was driving by in the Columbia River Gorge, it was before I even started this job. So I wasn't part of any wind discussion. And I noticed, like, huh, why? So should we do that? Or here's another finding. We export most of the onshore wind we produce in Oregon. Why? Can we stop exporting? So there are other avenues that we believe should be explored before we are going forward with these horrendous plans that it makes me speechless more often than not. Just looking at the scale and understanding what will go in that, what the size of those things, it's insane. Okay. We know the impact of the existing technologies already, solar and onshore wind. We know they are less expensive, less risky. And we know that if we want to approach and address climate change crisis, those things will help us get it done sooner than not. With offshore wind, it will still take many, many years for actually climate crisis to be tackled. We are approached by now, there's more actually communities that were added to the lease. We know that, and you know, City of Newport, Port of Newport passed a resolution, Grace Harbor passed a resolution, Port Orford, but that was a while back. I believe Port of Astoria writing the letter. So the, and we are still approaching, there was also, was it, which
Port Abandon.
Port Abandon. So Gold Beach, City of Gold Beach reached out, also working on something like that. And my ask of you is to consider taking a position in this issue, prioritizing existing ocean user groups, really recognizing the value of those players that we have in front of us now and today. And I believe our ask is very reasonable. It outlines the draft resolution you have in your packet, outlines very specific items. They're very reasonable. I do not believe there's any unreasonable item asking for the transparent process, for seats at the table, for BOEM to study first environmental impacts and impacts to the local communities and existing ocean users, and then make a decision. I believe it's very reasonable, among two other things. I am grateful for this opportunity. Thank you. I am here to answer your questions, and I would like to pass the microphone, not say it else, because I've been playing with it surprisingly that I didn't do anything. To Brad, Willie, and Leonard, to speak to the issue. Come on, guys.
Okay, as we go along here, I want to remind everybody we've got a whole bunch of other things we got to do here today, and many of us have another meeting at 5, so.
Get that red flag, you later. Sorry.
Can you stand up or sit down?
Whatever you're comfortable with, right. Brad.
I'll sit down. All right. I'm Brad Pettinger. I'm fishing vessel Alex. Fished out this port for a number of years. Grew up here in this town. Involved in numerous committees and commissions in the fishing industry in Oregon. I'm currently the vice chair of the State Fishery Management Council. Although I'm not here speaking in that on their behalf. You were talking about floating platforms with rotors probably in excess of 600 feet in diameter, anchored in waters from 500 to 4,200 feet on our coast. An issue here is a rush process. Where BOEM is leasing areas off our coast, it will negatively impact Oregon's fishing industry and our ocean ecosystem. We have concerns with the anchoring system, the negative downwind effects to ocean upwellings. What they've seen in the North Sea is that the wind is slows down 40 miles downwind of these things. If those aren't familiar with that, upwellings are critical to the productivity of our coast. We're also concerned about the cable routes to shore and the size of the exclusion zones that are going to be around these cable or these facilities and the cables as they do come ashore. Just name a few. I'm the vice chair of the State Fishery Management Council, and very seldom you get groups with speaking with one voice. But I got to hand it to BOEM. They've done that because virtually every commercial, recreational, tribal, and most of the NGOs have come out about, they're very concerned about the pace these things are moving forward. Matter of fact, the council formed a Marine Planning Committee, and we got a lot of stuff on our agenda, our workload, and we spent 10% of our floor time on this very item, this last meeting. As you later mentioned, we're asking you to join other ports, cities, and counties in slowing down this process, so we can fully understand what these currently unknown effects are.
some of you may have, you may say that we won't, but we can't have an impact in this process. I don't believe that is the correct assumption. On the East Coast, the city and state governments have been in favor of establishing these facilities. And that is not necessarily the case off of Oregon. Last week, as Elena mentioned, Oregon's Coastal Caucus, so Leonard Bone is in harmony with the request before you today. It is also election season. As our voices, and as our voices in slowing down this process down are heard, I think our chances are going to grow. We aren't going to see any impacts or any benefits to this, our coastal economy, as far as jobs or vessels that may service these things. Most likely these platforms will be serviced by helicopter. Let's be realistic. We're going to drive one of those things off this ocean on a daily basis without tearing them. Do a lot of damage to the platform and the boat. No port south of Puget Sound or north of LA will be able to erect these things because of bridge height restrictions or water depth in these ports.
You mean they're not going to build a facility in Coos Bay to build it? Like
God bless them. Yeah. Bless their heart.
I'm sorry.
As you mentioned, remember, Bone's job is to lease ground. They don't give a damn about anything past that. They care a little bit, but realistically, that's their job. They're just going through the motions. They're checking the boxes. So don't think it's anything else but that. But there's a lot of things that are unknown, and coming in here and building these things out, as they're talked about doing, without understanding that, is the fool's errand. We could potentially destroy a lot of known positives to this port, right, as far as good things. Sport, commercial fishing had a lot of value to the sport and to the state and the country as a whole, as far as commercial fishing in general, at least, as far as feeding people. I'd ask for support and moving forward, the resolution. I say harmony with what everybody else is doing, and thank you for your time. I'm more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
And I've been at a council meeting last week. I just got home, so I'm going to go home. Anyway.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brad.
Sure. I'll be brief. Promise. I don't think any of you really need convincing to form this letter. So, and I do have a couple of interesting points to bring out. I think you've heard about there are studies that demonstrate that salmon, when you throw a piece of iron in a tank, changes their direction. You throw a piece of metal like a power conductor in there, even without a current, they really get confused. So we're going to put a big electromagnetic field out here, not just to the detriment of salmon, but to our other offshore pelagic species and possibly our whales' echolocation ability, all kinds of things. We don't even know. This is like uncharted ground, as Elena said, and Brad, and people say, like Rich, why don't we just put a prototype out here and see how it goes for a while, see if it's going to work. This is a prototype. History shows us that if you look at Rhode Island and the state of Virginia, those offshore wind farms went in as a prototype of this caliber. Then there's a phase two, a phase three, and so on. They want to blanket our ocean with these things. I'm going to skip. To put it into perspective, 3 gigawatts. The state of California uses almost 200,000 gigawatts of power. So this is a sliver of power. Oregon is not going to get any benefit from this. It's going to go to the open market on the national grid. California will likely be the highest bidder to buy that. So Oregon affords all the risk and has pretty much no benefit to us, let alone little benefit to the national grid. As it sits right now also, Oregon taxpayers are expected to pay for any onshore infrastructure improvement costs related to the project. And I'm skipping some stuff, if you can tell, because I know you want to get on to your meeting. Have you heard of the
feed and tariff clause that's incorporated on the East Coast projects. Now, that's a state statute that we need to adopt, but what that does, it assures the investors that the electrical ratepayers will pick up any of the tab for, say, a storm event, or like you were speaking of, President Rich, if a windmill winds up on the beach, who's going to pay for cleanup? The ratepayers. Now, that's not part of it, but I'm sure it's in the planning stages, and I'm guessing that they wouldn't want to speak about that if we asked them tomorrow. Anyway, I would just urge you to craft this letter and urge them to defer this project until an environmental impact statement is done, for instance, which is usually the course of business. This should be no exception. It is somehow. Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Willie Gergen, if you don't know me, currently own a seafood restaurant, Cattle Seafood, two fishing boat operations. I employ about 40 people on this porch. It's pretty rare to get together a bunch of commercial fishermen, sport fishermen, environmental groups, seafood processors, just to name a few that all agree on the same issue. I don't see any benefit of this. I think we have to push back. The call area shown on the map overlaps already restricted zones for a lot of fisheries. So, you know, it may not look like that big of a call area when you look at it on the map, but there's already the RCA inside it that it overlaps with. It's basically going to take away, if they use that call area, multiple fisheries out of this harbor. Those boats are going to have to relocate. I don't know where they would relocate to because of the other call areas. So there's just so much. I got so many negative impacts from my perspective. I could be here all day. I'm not going to do that. I know you guys got to get your meeting done, but I just want to thank you guys for listening, and I support everything that everybody else has said. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So, this is not an action item, it's an information item. Does anybody have things they want to say?
I'm 100% against them, so.
I don't know what you said, Richard.
This is not an action item, it's an informational item. What we're contemplating here, though, is a resolution from this Port Commission stating our concerns. Elena drafted one for us. I took it and modified it. I took a couple things out. You'll notice the strikeout on the science and research vessels. I think that's a bleed over from the Newport resolution. We don't have those folks here. And on item five, this was a discussion that you saw up here about a lot of economic analysis. I struck that out and changed that to suggest the establishment of a mitigation bank to be paid for by the lessees, and that bank would be used to fund infrastructure at ports for the benefit of the commercial fisheries, research and monitoring efforts by both the federal and state governments, economic development and grant programs for local communities that are affected by this. I do that because I've never had any experience with utility companies, but I have spent a lot of heartburn and agonizing years fighting the gold industry in Nevada, which is, to me, pretty closely paralleling this. When those folks showed up, they proposed to use technology that had not been used in this country before, which was the heap leaching system, where they would take ore that they extracted from open pit mines, pile it on plastic and saturate it with sodium cyanide, and then collect that runoff in what were called pregnant solution ponds and then mill that. So we were asked as an agency to comment on this. Well, we've never seen this. We didn't even know what to think about. We didn't know what to look for, what to be concerned about. And ultimately they did, and they killed, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of migratory birds, just like that. So we learned a lot as we went. I see this process is very similar to that. They're asking us to evaluate the impact of these things. We don't know what they are yet. So everything that you see here, in my view, is speculation. We're looking at the worst-case scenarios, and we're speculating about exactly what's going to happen. We have no idea, and we will not know until we put one of these things in the water. So I'll borrow from the experience of my son, who's currently designing and building an airplane. And I saw it recently, and I asked him, I said, so this is it? And he said, well, this is the first thing that will fly, but this is far, far, far from what the next item is going to look like, because we have a test article that we're going to fly and evaluate, and we will then tear it completely apart and build a new airplane based on what we find. That, I think, is what we're asking for here with this test site. One or two of these things put in place, and let's actually measure what the impacts are. If there is electromagnetic energy escaping, what the wind effects are, none of these have ever been built in Oregon waters. None of these have been anchored in deep water. As Leonard mentioned, my worst nightmare when I wake up in the morning, if one of these things is that Sunday morning we wake up and one of these things is washed ashore at Natural Bridges or at the base of Cape Sebastian or at Hooshkanagan Creek. How on earth are we going to get that out? And who's going to pay for it? And it will not be the energy company. So I favor a resolution from us, however we choose to word it. At the next meeting, we should consider that, I think. That would be my recommendation. I will testify Friday in Gold Beach on this, but this is, the ocean is not managed in multiple use like public land is, even though it is public land. And in a public land setting, fishing, navigation, transport would be considered compatible existing uses. And in the multiple use concept, those uses would be weighed against the impact from this. So that's a different process. That's not happening here. This is an energy process, and so it'll take precedent over everything else that appears. So anyway, any other discussion?
Is there any reason we can't move this to an action item?
Yeah, because it's not noticed.
Pardon me?
It's not been noticed as an action item. Okay. So we'll have to notice it as an action item, prepare the resolution for public review, and move forward.
Right? The idea was to have you guys absorb all this information, and if you guys like the resolution, that will come back to a special meeting next week, because they need this, the deadline is 28, so we'd have to have a special meeting next week to move this forward.
I'd like to see it as an action item next week.
Okay. Any other comments on the resolution, or go by what Richard made his comments? Any other inputs?
So which one?
What's the one that Richard handed out?
It was a strike. It took out a lot of things, so I was just wondering why he removed a lot of it.
Well, as I said, there's no mention in the original resolution about any sort of mitigation or mitigation bank. I think to me that's a very crucial piece of this that we should ask for at this stage. The other thing that bothers me about this is we're allowing the industry to call a shot here. Bowman has no design standard whatsoever for these things. I would recommend a design standard that says we will fish them. Now, not all fishing is going to be allowed on these. You're not going to be able to have a trawl fishery in the Middle East, but I darn well guarantee you we're going to troll them. Depending on how they're designed, we control salmon or tuna in the middle of those things. We do it around crab pots all the time. And if they're spaced a mile apart and they're oriented with the current north and south, we control them. The other design criteria I would put in is east-west passage. So, most of the current's going to be oriented north and south, and I think that's the way these things are going to be laid out. But when we go tuna fishing, we go east and west. And I would just tell them, we're going to go through them, design them so we can go through them. Design those submerged cables to be a minimum of 200 feet under the water, surface of the water, so we control over them. Why can't we set a standard for these things and then tell industry, if you want to build one of these, this is the way you're going to have to do it, as opposed to them coming in and saying, well, we just don't like that. I just don't think that's okay for me.
You were earlier today during the meeting, the first meeting with Bones, we had the regional director, Dr. Corey, there. And in Q&A section, he was asked a question. Due to the really high concerns with the radio, the radar interference. So he was asked a question. If there is an accident and someone got hurt, fishermen got hurt, both sunk, what have you happened? Whose responsibility that would be? And you'd like to know his answer? Coast Guard.
Well, if these things are placed in the water and they are charted, and I hit one in the middle of the night, I don't think that's their problem.
However, the radar interference, when there it looks like there is basically the objects that are not there, or opposite, there is a barge, but if you don't see a barge on your radar, then
have we tested that? Do we know?
There is scientific. There are studies about it. There are the whole papers written already about it. And as a matter of fact, there is the study that part of our government did. I believe they already came out. There are so many studies. I would be happy to find it and forward it to you.
Well, if the contemplation by the United States government is that they're going to commit the American taxpayers to underwrite these things, to accept all the responsibility for anything that goes wrong, to accept all the responsibility for research and monitoring, which is going to be intense by both National Marine Fisheries Service and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and they're going to exclude a large portion of the ocean from any uses, then nobody can agree to that. Nobody can agree to that. But we don't know that yet, because all they've told us is this is the color. They haven't told us what they're going to do with it, what we can and can't do in it. They just drew up lines on the map and said that's where we want to put them. So to me, that's pretty hard to react to, other than pure speculation. So, I mean, I'm not telling you I like this process. I hate it. This is bad. But how to react to this at the moment, I think a resolution saying we have these concerns and you should think about these things is probably the most appropriate thing at this point for us to do.
I just want to add one more item that over the course of the last couple of years, this resolution outlines the points that reflect all of them were at some point or another mentioned in one, the letters from the Pacific Fishery Management Council to Bowen. None of them are just came out of nowhere.
Right.
And Marine Planning Committee of the PFMC also underscore those requests.
Well, it sounds to me like there's pretty general agreement we'll do a resolution here and support that. If the final product will be determined, I guess, however you want to do it.
We'll just make sure everything is in the resolution that...
Well, most of the only thing, I only changed one thing, basically, and that was...
Number five.
Number five. So,
well, if there's anything more to add, if you come
back. Well, it won't.
Before it comes to our next meeting.
It won't be by me because I'm not going to be here. So.
Oh.
How did you call in?
What's that?
How did you call in?
I'll call in. Yeah, okay. I'll call in.
For sure. What day and time benefit everybody next week?
Next week?
Just not Thursday.
Okay. Not Thursday. That's easy.
Theoretically, I'm supposed to be going sturgeon fishing that day, so.
I'm going with him.
I don't have the calendar with me.
What was that, Larry?
I'm going fishing with him.
I'm free all week.
You want to do Wednesday?
Make it after 7:00.
Wednesday, 2 o'clock, come to Sim Rose at this meeting?
Sure.
I mean, it'd be a quick meeting.
Okay.
The only thing we have is just this item.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's some emergency thing pops up, but right now it's just be this.
Wednesday, 22nd.
22nd at 2 p.m.?
2 p.m.
Is that right with everybody?
Yeah.
Yes? Wednesday, 22nd, 2 p.m., good? No.
No.
Okay. Change plan.
Any days but Wednesdays. My Wednesdays are for the rest of the month tied up.
And then Tuesday, 2 p.m.
Okay.
Tuesday's fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, Yolanda, looks like we'll have a resolution out by Tuesday.
Okay. Thank you, I appreciate it. And I appreciate the time, and I apologize for taking so much time today.
Okay. That brings us to the Pacific Seafood request for a dock hoist.
Yeah, Travis mentioned, he's actually touched base on it in the report, that the hoist is back in place, but when we do replace these hoists, we're definitely looking at engineering for engineering, the new ones down. So, right now, Pacific Seafood is good with that hoist. The yellow one that has never, as far as I've been here, has never been in use that I'm aware of. So, but the blue one, you guys do use.
Yeah, it's in better shape than it has been, probably since it's brand new.
So I'll just point out with this topic here. So when talking about offshore energy and mitigating the loss to the commercial fleet, particularly the trawl fleet, these are the kind of things I had in mind with that mitigation fund, that we could apply for improved dock hoists. We could apply for better facilities, you know, for landing fish, for doing those kind of things. The direct benefit to the commercial fleet, paid for by the people who are basically creating the issues. So that's the kind of stuff that I would contemplate, but that's not there at the moment. But anyway. Okay?
Yes.
Zola's on the water concrete patio.
All right. Let's let the board know that they poured some concrete outside their lease area, didn't notify port management. We did see it happening right the day before, actually the day of their pouring concrete. Travis talked to him about it. I sent a letter to him, letting him know that it's a violation of their lease outside their lease area. So the next question is, does the board want to include that to the lease, in the lease space area, because they have their tables kind of expanded their outside seating area.
And what is that facility?
Yeah, that's also, that was placed there when they were doing their expansion, and I thought they were planning on moving it back, but apparently it's now more of a storage area for them. I think that's their firewood or something.
Yeah, well, maybe
include all
that. Have a conversation with them, see if they're interested in adding that in.
Yeah.
I would suggest two things. I would suggest that we include it in the lease, and I would also suggest a letter from our attorney to them stating that, you know, you can tell them how many times we've done this. This isn't the first Zola's issue we've had, but that if further failure to comply with the current lease agreement occurs again, then we will consider terminating our lease and removing them from the premise.
Yeah, I did consult with our lawyer with my letter, and it's stated that way, that the next letter would be coming from our lawyer.
Okay.
I kind of want to go through the process. Travis knows them verbally. I wrote, it's now written in their file, all the things that they've done in the past. And the next step would be.
You know, I think a lot of these business entities we have working here are great. I love them. And that's one of them. But at the same time, it's, you know, we can't continue to just say, well, okay, God, okay, it's your will. And so it looks to me like we're kind of in the process of doing it and asking for forgiveness. And
right.
Okay.
Well, the other thing is if they have patrons going out there and they're consuming alcohol, there's lots of issues with that. If they haven't gone through the process to get an extension of premises, alcohol permit outside, and it's not in their lease, and it's happening on port property, the port's then going to be liable if something happens to somebody out there. So it's a big deal, in my opinion.
Good opinion.
Yeah, because I'm sure people are drinking out there who are not supposed to be. Technically, they're drinking open container on port property right now. We're responsible, not them.
Good point.
And they're making revenue off that night, so there's no reason we're not.
Right.
Okay. Next order on Zola. Move to cable TV and Wi-Fi. This looks like an upgrade to what we have.
Yeah, I guess the first question is, Are you guys okay with upgrading Wi-Fi to cover 100% and also make it better, better amenity that we currently have? Because it's not covering the entire, RV park. And also, the cable TV system that we do have is, as it stated, archaic. And it's going to be becoming harder and harder to repair it. So we are doing a survey with our guests to find out, you know, how many people actually use the cable versus Wi-Fi. Right now, Wi-Fi is overwhelmingly what they want to use, but we do have a small percentage that still use cable TV. So I kind of want to throw this idea to you guys. Do you want to have the cable TV kind of wane itself out and then go all 100% Wi-Fi?
We do pay $600 a month for cable TV.
Yeah.
So will this be part of the upgrade we're doing in the project that's coming up?
No.
It's a separate program.
Separate. Yep.
Well, it seemed to me, given the state of the art right now, that we'd be much better off to focus on Wi-Fi. And, you know, you can stream TV, you can do all kinds of things with Wi-Fi, and cable TV is that expensive, and or we're going to have to upgrade at great cost, and I don't know, from my perspective, I don't know if we're doing
it. Are rates going to go up on RV spaces after all our improvements?
They're going up July 1st already.
Right.
People are probably already paying that demand after July 1st.
It's the point I'm getting to. We're going to be charging more. I don't see a problem with upgrading what we're offering.
Okay. That's the answer you needed?
Yeah, I think so. And Travis?
Yes, that's enough.
Okay. USDA Civil Rights Compliance Review and Response.
All right, so in the packet I gave you guys the letter that we got from them and our response, we do have some accessibility issues at our court office for our employees. Our restrooms are for our employees only, not for the public. And we have some issues at the RV park office for accessibility. Right now, we just, if we have any issues, we meet with anybody that has accessibility issues outside, and deal with them outside, not in the office. So, anyway, any questions on those reports? The person that did the interview with us and site inspection, she's reviewing my response, and she'll let me know if she had any questions.
Seems like you addressed everything she brought to you, at least in some manner. Mm-hmm. Why did she show up? Do we know? An annual thing?
Every 3 to 5 years, USDA, I guess it's part of the loan documents for the rebuild of our Basin 1 back in 2000, they do this civil rights inspection. So every 3 to 5 years, they show up and making sure that we're abiding by the loan documents that we got. Eight more years? So maybe one more inspection?
Well, that kind of leads us from there to the next item, which is the Boatyard Building Court Office proposal. So at this point, you're just kind of producing concepts for us to think about?
Yeah, just like an open discussion. If you have any ideas or suggestions other than what we put there on our map, right now I'm estimating $1.2 million. That's what I threw out to Business Oregon. So they are entertaining a possible loan for that amount. Depending on our discussion today, we could be lowering that. If, you know, if we don't want to put all these buildings in, just want to put one building in, then it'd be a smaller loan amount. So this is what I'm proposing. Is the one large warehouse building. A smaller building that do like office retail, since we had a lot of people wanted to use to rent out our small building at the Oregon Homes building. So there's a need for small office spaces. So that's the idea of that small building. Plus it helps cover our our loan debt that we get. And then if we add a little more to it, we can put a travel lift building, a three-sided building to help protect that from the elements. And a little bit more to put a new court office. Me and Travis were talking, going back to our original idea with our COVID money that we were originally thinking of putting the court office over in the vacant area by the navigation tower. Mm-hmm. So that would be the estimate location. This port office would have a new meeting room, be a little bit larger than 100 square feet larger than this. So this space here would become available for rent. So yeah, for using. Anyway, that's my idea. It's kind of first proposal. It's kind of what your guys' comments are.
I didn't see you had anything in here for the RV park to have a season office.
So my idea on that is, and when we expand the RV park on the kite field, is to move the office out there.
Oh, I see.
Open right now that office takes up, I think, two spaces or three? Two spaces right now. And right now, our survey is telling us most people come there for the beach. So my idea is, well, we shouldn't be taking spaces closer to the beach. Let's move our office away from the beach and open those other sites open up for rent. That's my idea. That's why I didn't mention it.
Okay, thank you. I was just wondering why something.
Well, I think conceptually I like the idea of doing this. The question is the loan and the rest of our debt. So, you know, what I would like to see is all the debt displayed plus.
Can you talk into the mic, please?
All of our debt. All of our loans enumerated what they are. We know they're going to all be paid off in a certain period. What this loan would look like. You've got information in here on the cost-benefit ratios and those kind of things. So that's what I would balance my decision about, is just how this fits with the rest of our loan package. And I say that because, you know, this community remembers pretty well, I think, that we were broke a few years ago. And now we're talking about taking out a loan for $1.3 million for this project. We're going to want to be able to demonstrate pretty clearly that not only do we have our current debt under control and we've got it scheduled to be paid off, which we know we do, mm-hmm. Within the budget we just approved, but if we spend this money, the likelihood of repaying this is guaranteed. So that it's not another green building that, you know, we're going to hear that for the rest of our lives no matter what we do, but that's going to be the concern that we're going to be doing.
And of course, this is where they're going to do a complete financial analysis, like I mentioned earlier, which I'm pretty sure that's going to cover a lot of those questions that you have. They did ask in the email I got this right before the meeting was what repayment source would be paying the loan. Mm-hmm. So I did a quick spreadsheet on just the spaces that's in that map that I'm proposing to you guys. The new space that we created plus our current rates would be $100 short paying that loan if it's 4% APR. I don't know what the interest rate's going to be at by the time all this plays out. So at that rate, we're $100 short. It's $6,300 a month, and we're bringing in $6,200 based on our current rates and filling up all those spaces, including renting this place out. I guess the only bonus part of all that is our lease payment on our travel lift is ending next year, and that frees up $4,600 that we're paying out monthly for the travel lift. So that could be applied covering the additional cost.
I'd be comfortable with a little more margin than $100 a month.
$100 a month, but you're also getting your travel lift cut. It's all four of the buildings put together that two of them are generating enough revenue to pay for all four.
But the point is, if that projected rate of return is at 100% occupancy, right, then we could be hanging out there.
Is that what you figured out, 100% occupancy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's my only concern.
Yeah.
if the economy takes a downturn, we go into recession, we've got an outstanding loan and nobody wants to rent office space, then we could get stuck. I think the shop space and those big storage areas, I don't think there's any question that's going to go. I just don't know about that office space. That's the one I'd be most concerned about. As far as putting in a new office for you guys, that's...
Of course, the spreadsheet I made, I don't know, it depends on how you want to play the numbers, but I subtracted what we're currently making on that old building. So, and if you include the entire rental of that building, then we're way over what we need. But I subtracted $3,500 that we're currently making. I projected $6,200 new income for the port. And that makes sense, is what I did.
Not to me.
Well, the new space that we're putting in, we're going to generate $6,200 more than what we're currently making out there now.
Right.
So.
I got you there, but I don't know why you wouldn't include the money you're making there now.
Well, you could. I subtracted just showing that this is the new money that we're currently kind of retaining our tenants, so I subtracted that $3,500. It depends on how you mark this tenant. But I put all the numbers down. If they want to look at it and add that $3,500, then we're $3,500.
It would seem logical to me. You'd list the amount of square footage you have to be rented, so that would be your income.
Right.
Not just what you're going to make in addition to what you already have. I mean, that's the way I would look at it. But I'm not even confident in doing the checkbook. My wife won't let me do that. So I'm not an expert by any means.
Okay.
I need to ask something.
Go ahead.
Right now, we have a debt of $5,500,000 or $50,000. We're looking at doing another loan of $1.2 million for this project. We still have the matching fund to do for the wastewater treatment plant, so that's going to put us up to over $7 million. We still have the RV park, so we're going to be paying no interest on the Business Oregon loans we have, but we will be paying interest to the bank loans we have. Is that correct? So what is the total monthly payment going to be with $7+ million, probably closer to $8 million or more than $8 million? And how are we going to justify that when we have no increase in revenue? What am I missing that you're not?
The $5 million that you started off with is already accounted for. So.
Well, that's what it says right here. That's what we have right now.
Right. And that's currently what's being paid through our basically.
I can't hear you.
And that's what's currently being paid through our general fund with our fees and what
we're making quarterly payments
right.
on that debt.
So that $5 million is basically accounted for, and we have a process on how we're already paying for that section. So
all right, so we're going to add $3 million. Yes. How are we paying for the $3 million?
That's why each time we've came to these loans, or each time we've came to you, such as the RV park expansion that we're doing, we had to extensively prove. I mean, I know we're getting more loans, but each one of these individual loans have been figured out how they're going to pay for it. The RV park project is paying for itself by the additional new sites that we're putting in. So that revenue, based upon what our numbers and pre-forecasts have been, says that we're going to make all that loan back with those six spaces and a little bit more. Same thing that we're having to do with the new shop space and everything is we're going to have to create, you know, a way that these items that we're building can sustain enough revenue to pay for themselves. Each one of these are dependent on themselves paying it instead of the port looking at it as one whole loan. Each one of these decisions need to be able to pay for themselves.
Okay. Next is, you're making a lot of assumptions on these four buildings for the costs. Mm-hmm. So if you want to proceed, in my mind, I want to see a turnkey bid by a legitimate company from, you know, that includes everything that you've got outlined. which is not an unreasonable request, I don't think, which we need anyway. Because I think you're way, way under what is reality, and I hope I'm wrong. But I would like to see two bids from two companies that are turnkey, and there's no issue with the companies doing that, that I know of. If they want the bid, they can provide the service that includes the building, the erection, the concrete work, all plumbing, you know, turnkey, complete operation.
Well, that has to be part of the bidding process, but before you go to bid, we need to make sure what we want to put out there is bid.
Well, we need to prioritize the buildings then that we want. Well,
that's why we're here right now, is to decide, you know, and not 1.2 million, maybe we don't need a new office yet. Maybe we don't want the four smaller buildings out front. Maybe we don't put a travel lift.
Like I said, maybe we go back to one building.
A building at all, but that's why we're here. We just found that the more buildings we build for leasable space,
The more
you're going to get and the more you're going to bring in. So, but maybe we don't want 1.2 million. Maybe we want to start, you know, 500,000 and do our big shop down there and get, I guess the whole start of this was the boatyard shop. The boatyard shop is a number one, the problem that we're trying to get taken care of.
That's not optional.
And so maybe, you know, and that's why we're talking about it, maybe we just look at building that shop and see, you know, what these spaces are going to be, kind of like what's laid out in front of us, and see what that square footage is, see what, so like that. That's what we want to talk about.
The building, the large warehouse building by itself, I should have brought those numbers with me, I did this more this afternoon, but the building itself, that large building, is going to bring in $7,100 a month. Now, if you use Richard's idea of just taking that money to apply to the loan, you're paying the loan off plus some. So that's at a 1.2 million, which you could do more with it. And like Ken was saying, it all depends on the bidder and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if we're actually going to get anybody to bid these things either. The historical thing on this port is they put things out to bid and find out the port builds them. That's why we're kind of in some of our situations now, because they couldn't get contractors to build, or the price is so high, the port did the work. So anyway,
well, I mean, if you're looking for phases, I think the sweet spot is to figure out how to pay for the port building, or to get somebody else to pay for the port building. So we know that the warehouse is going to have to get done, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's going to generate X number of dollars, money above and beyond what the loan requires to pay off the loan, could be applied to paying off the office, if you see what I mean. So I think we'd have to look at a balance of that shop plus the other retail areas and see where that left us in terms of how much money we would have available to help pay off the port office and the travel. Do you follow me?
Yeah, that's kind of what we're, I mean, that's how it's fit. We were figuring that the big shop, the support shop, and the small buildings in front, that money is generated from them. We'll pay for our port office and the travel building.
So that means we need to set the priorities right.
Pay for the loan.
Let's get
extra.
Right. And so we're getting two buildings. If
we looked at phase one as being the shop building, we know that's going to happen. Okay. So then we could consider phase two, which might include those retail spaces. Mm-hmm. And if the combined income above and beyond the payment, annual monthly payment is enough to cover the other two buildings, then we can consider that in there in the part of phase two. That makes sense.
So you're saying to let your moneymakers basically be established and make the money, and then use those revenues to go after future fund report, like a port office or something, saying you're generating that, you're paying for this from these buildings?
Well, not 100%, because if we were going to build a port office using that concept, we'd have to spend a lot of time saving money. We'd have to take the surplus and just shovel it in a hole somewhere and say, when we get to this point, we can build an office. I don't think you've got that much time with the office you're in. You know, the problem is that, like everything else in here, everything's falling around our ears, and that's one of them. Fixing it doesn't look to me like a very good option, just from where I sit. I mean, you're just, you know, you're kind of passionate bacon. So, anyway, I think the concept should be is shop number one, everything else we can look at.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Does it make sense to you?
There's another option. Kenny at the boat shop has offered to build a 40 by 100 building and lease it to the port, minus what he wants out of it, at no cost to the port. I don't hear that on the table.
Kenny purchasing and putting building a building?
He has offered to you to lease the land on a long-term lease, build a building that will take care of his shop and additional space.
The last time we talked to Kenny about that idea, he ran it and maybe talked to you since then. He hasn't talked to us since then, but the last time we talked to him about that idea, he could get a long-term lease for the building. That was his concern.
He can't get a long-term lease?
Yeah, he couldn't get a 25 or 30-year lease like we can with Business Oregon. But like I said, that was a couple months ago when we talked to us about it.
Are you saying lease or loan?
Loan. I'm sorry, loan.
So the loans that he was finding for that were available were in the 15, was that the max is a 15-year range that
he could
drove his payment up so high that he wouldn't be able to make that.
Well, I mean, certainly if he's expressed desire to do that, we could tender him the opportunity. If he wants to put it in writing and give us something to actually talk about, we could consider that too. That's an option.
Would that be something that we would want to open up to anybody to be able to do? Because it just seems like that's walking into an opportunity for somebody to build something. I'm not too fond. I mean, if we're building a shop or something that's needed out there, the port, in my opinion, the port just needs to get the money and build it and retain that asset ourselves versus trying to have somebody else's building on your land. To me, it's just kind of not a good long-term route for revenue for the port versus just building it and retaining that money over.
We would lose a lot of revenue doing it that way.
The port's done that years past, and all those leases are a nightmare.
Yeah.
When it comes to the end of the lease, it gets really funky. We extended Catalyst Seafood, the same thing. We extended their lease because I'm kicking the can down the road because we then accept the building at that condition, or do we?
Right.
So it gets, like I said, there's a couple leases that way. My personal opinion would, for my recommendation, I wouldn't go that route either. But then again, I would not entertain this proposal. I mean, I'd definitely look at it.
So we're not going to solve this today.
No.
So why don't we just try and come back with something at the next meeting that kind of explores all those options that we talked about and see where we go from that. Okay with everybody?
Yep.
Thanks. RV park new fence divider.
And so the RV park project does not include the fence dividers. That was always part of our doing. Travis and I have been thinking about this for a long time. I got a picture of our current fence in the packet. There's a lot of maintenance to deal with that, so we're looking at new fence ideas, and what we came up with what we like best is the block idea with the wood in between it. This picture here.
Would it be any higher than that?
Nope, 2 feet high.
So their slides, it wouldn't interfere with their slides?
Right.
Because they are wider than the fence.
That's one bonus. Plus, these things would be easy to fix. They're not anchored in the ground. Somebody hits them. You do hit our fence occasionally. The wind and weather is a number.
Does anybody have any other ideas for fences, dividers that not in here? I mean, I know there's a lot of different ways out there to separate one from another, but any good ideas anybody see?
The lowest maintenance you can find.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's not, as long as it's not a chain link fence. I just personally hate chain link fences.
What about the white plastic stuff? You actually just put an anchor in the ground and just white plastic. It doesn't have to be structural.
It can't be too tall. And those units are getting wider and wider.
Well, the height of whatever's there.
I just like the block idea. Whether or not it's two blocks, three blocks, or all of the block, whatever, but it's easy to move. If you ever want to redesign or remove whatever, and plus it's a nice thing to protect our utilities. They do hit our pedestals now quite often.
Yep. And we're going to have new ones.
Right.
Well, the block and wood looks to me like a pretty cheap, a relatively cheap way to go. But as you say, it's pretty easy. It's portable, basically, if you need to move it.
I think it's going to be easy to repair and maintain. If somebody does hit it, break the wood.
So the fences are basically to delineate each lot, each space. We're not looking for privacy or kids throwing balls or dogs jumping through or over.
No, just kind of say that's your side and this is my side.
Which is necessary.
It's necessary.
Yeah.
Or I think this total length on this was what we're shooting for is 24 feet. You're permanent and forever. Of a 6-inch stem wall that's 2 feet tall, just concrete wall. Never go back to it, ever. But it doesn't look that great.
Well, and from a practical sense, it's, whatever, you got a utility underneath there you got to fix, and you don't want to tear that wall out. It's much easier to pick those blocks up, move the wood, do your work, put it back together, and be done with it. Mm-hmm.
There is a sewer line going underneath all that.
Yeah.
I know it.
If they ever need to dig it up, so we'll be wiping out whatever permanent fence we have in there.
Well, they have an easement to dig it up.
We're not making a final decision here. You're just
interviewing the contractor. If there's anything that's not on here that anybody wanted to mention.
If you guys come up with any other ideas, I mean, we got time to figure this out. It's not, we've got several months. It's not until October they start doing the work, December when they finish.
Well, and, we could actually get some prototypes and test them too. Look at them and see how they look. Okay. Summer food drive-in bus route. Dine-in bus route.
Can somebody tell me what that is? I don't know.
Okay.
Did I miss it?
Well, I have a bus that's painted like a watermelon. And what they do, the school district. And Cindy, she's head of the food service at the school. And so what she does is they make lunches and food in that the kids can take home with them too, because we have so many children in this district that suffer from food insecurities here. There are so many that are on the food program. And so in the summertime, these children suffer. And so this program has really helped them. And so what she does is she parks at designated areas, and then the students or with their parents, they come to the bus. And some of them eat, I guess, on the bus, but they also take a meal home too that they can have either later or the next day.
Is this done year-round or just when school's out?
Just when school was out.
Summertime. Yeah, June 30th to July 27th. It'll be Wednesdays only.
Mm-hmm.
ours, I think it would be from like 11:10 to 11:30. So it's basically stop at this time. People come get what they, mm-hmm. the way Cindy describes me, I don't think people will be eating on the bus. It's just a location for them to come get what they, what they're picking up and leave.
Mm-hmm.
They asked if it was a place that they could do it. So we said we'd mention it to you. So far, I think they're actually located, trying to go up to the Grange. It's better suited for the people at the location, but.
To the Grange?
Yeah, Grange.
I was going to give them the okay. I just want the board to know that.
I mean, they work very hard.
I don't see a problem liability-wise. They're in a parking lot.
Anybody else?
Crescent City does something similar to that. Their school bus system goes out, and they stop at each of the individual bus stops, and they hand out the food to the children. My grandkids get their food during the summer the same way. It's a very good program. However, it being in one spot kind of concerns me.
No, they
going to miss.
They moved all the way around.
It was just the location for the four, from 11:10 to 11:30. They have four different locations.
I don't see a problem if they want to park out in the parking lot. There's plenty of parking spaces for people to come and visit them. And
yeah.
Can't imagine it's too big a deal.
It's not. It's a good thing. It's a really good thing.
Travel lift ramp sediment impact. This will be one we're going to be talking about for a while.
We have been talking about this.
This is a reoccurring problem, and it's rear its head again that we have to haul out our boats at higher tides. It is impacting Travis's schedule and the boatyard schedule and all of those down to put the boats back in. And it's directly, the impact is directly by the 84-inch culvert that's depositing material coming off of from port property. I asked the roadmaster this recently, and his position is still the same that you guys remember. They're looking at grants and this grand master plan and all that kind of stuff, but they already have a clean out. It's their pipe. They have a right of way of that pipe. So, anyways, I just got his response today. So I think we're going to have a another discussion, maybe an action item going forward with this thing.
Well, I think we need to more than just that pipe, but just a general discussion with the county about, hey, you know, you just can't keep pumping stuff in here and expecting us to deal with it independently. I mean, what are we going to do to fix this, and how are we going to take care of what's already here? That's got to be the discussion, and we got to get some agreement on it, because you know, I just don't think the port can continue to just eat everything that comes downhill from the Harbor Hill. But, you know,
do we want to have a joint meeting with them and have them come here?
The county commissioners.
If he can come with a solution, he'll actually follow through with.
I don't know if they have a solution, but.
Well, if we were to begin with an exploratory meeting with them, just to talk about that issue, nothing else, to say, okay, let's talk about it, and then see if they can come up with some ideas, that would be a good way to start. Just kind of approach the topic and get started. And commission the commission would be fine. I think that would be great. Because ultimately, he's going to get his marching orders from them anyway. So, okay.
Start the conversation.
I mean, we're not only starting a conversation, but we're kind of saying, okay,
we're done.
We're repeating our conversation now for the third time, and getting the exact same response we got all the way back from the first time, and the same response we get from every other time. Meanwhile, while they're changing grants and funding and everything else, the port is impacted and currently paying for a culvert that has an easement that goes through our property that the port has zero impact to contribute to what's happening.
In point of fact, it's in the county's best interest to fix the problem, because, you know, whatever's going on up there isn't good, and whether it's individual landowners that aren't doing something right, or I don't know what happened, but we should start the conversation.
Well, I'm going to explore the plan of a commissioner and commissioner meeting here, and then I'll let you guys know the update of when that could be with them. They may request us going up there like they always do, but I think better them coming to our
I think we go down to a field meeting at low tide.
Can we were brought, the put in front of our
legal,
can we legally go after the county for
program?
They have a big cafeteria over by the hotel, but I don't think they clean it out.
Or is there an avenue there?
No, they clean it out, they clean it out for, just one of them.
Not very often, no.
I mean, it's obviously responsible.
Well, the idea here will be to
Oh, no, they do it once a year.
We'll pay, if they want to pay for it, we do it.
Idea here will be to initiate a conversation with a conclusion of that.
Right.
Even if it's sue us or whatever, I mean, at least we will have the conversation.
Yeah, can you let us know what legal says somewhere?
VCAM website.
All right, so based on the survey that we've been getting, everybody wants to see the beach. We used to have a beach cam that was on Channel 12 News, but we were paying them $600 a month for that service. I don't know how much advertising we got used out of that, but I kind of like the idea of having a beach cam on our website kind of side-by-side with our bar cam. And that would just take another camera to be installed. And I think I put in there roughly about $4,000 to put that in there. I think having that up on our beachfront website would be a good advertising motivation for people to come to their beach.
Would we sell advertisement on it like we do the bar cam?
Yep, I would. I'm assuming it might be on the same page, so I might be sharing that same advertisement.
That it would generate some money.
I like the idea. I'm just not sure it takes a higher priority than men with the bathroom.
I am, yeah.
Just that. If we're going to put up a camera, that to me would be a higher priority.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a bad idea. Now, certainly the bar cameras. I know you get me every morning, so.
Anyway, just throwing out the ideas.
Okay. All right. I'm not trying to rush us, but I kind of am. So, any comments? Well, I would comment that my kudos to you for the budget. I think it's a great looking budget document. Easy to read. Looks good. Our next regular meeting day will be Wednesday, July 20th, 2022 at 2 p.m. Sounds like we're going to have a special meeting to talk about the offshore energy resolution on Tuesday at 2. Okay.
June 21st.
All right. So with that, we will adjourn the meeting.
Goodbye.
Okay. And Richard, can you find the golf officer to sign our resolution real quick?
Sure.
Yeah, it has to be quick. We're playing.